The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Well, it's Monday, and a great podcast. We just came off of a fun tour, and we had about 3 hours sleep before the podcast, so it promises to be a little dicey, but a lot of fun. We start really with the election and the things that are happening now. The New York Times says it's the most important election of our lifetime. It always is. But what are we doing to make sure that people are actually going out to vote? Because the Democrats are.
And we spent a decent amount of time just boiling down where we are, like what to look for, what's the state of the race, what to watch on election night, what are the factors that are kind of forcing this race either to the Democrats or the Republicans' hands. It's a lot of interesting stuff. We're right here for the election, so we went into that deeply.
Right, and Stu gives us 3 points on a blue wave and why a blue wave is not going to happen.
Well, this is a summary that I'm not comfortable with, but I think there's arguments against it.
Right, and pretty good arguments.
Yeah.
Also, Dan Crenshaw is joining us. Now, Dan is the guy who's running for Ted Poe's seat here in Texas. He's the guy with the eye patch that Saturday Night Live made fun of this weekend. I love the fact that this guy refuses to be a victim as they make fun of his disability by saying things like, oh, yeah, I don't know, he lost his eye in the war or whatever. He refuses to be a victim. And he's like, that's not cool, but you know what? That's you, that's not me. And I just loved his attitude. We talked to him about his attitude of Saturday Night Live, how he found out about it, and how he responded, plus a little bit about his campaign.
Yep, and we talked about the tour as well. Talked to a bunch of people who actually went to it.
It was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
It was a lot of fun. And tomorrow will be a lot of fun. If you're at home and you're wanting to watch election coverage, don't forget our coverage starts on theblaze.com/TV at 6 p.m. That's Eastern time, right? Mm-hmm. 6 p.m. Eastern. We have a lot of special guests, a lot of fun. Let's just also put it this way. I'm the designated driver. If that tells you a little bit about our election coverage, and it could get worse and worse as the night goes on. But our election coverage, if you're not a subscriber, please subscribe to theblaze.com/TV and catch our election coverage tomorrow night. Here's the podcast for the day.
You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck program.
It's Monday, November 5th.
Talk about Home Title Lock, though.
Yeah, let me talk about Home Title Lock. I had a retired FBI agent in here a few months ago, and they demonstrated exactly how easy it is to steal your home. And I mean steal your home in a way that is phenomenal. All somebody has to do is get the right information, which is easy to do, fill out the right form, fake your signature, get a notary to authorize it, and your home is gone. And people can take out loans against it. I mean, this has ended up with homeowners being taken out with a SWAT team in Oregon. It's crazy. And only one company actually will protect you and can protect you.
You get your $100 free title scan. That's free right now if you sign up at HomeTitleLock.com. HomeTitleLock.com. Knock this off your list. It's a big problem.
Big problem.
Don't get caught in it, believe me.
HomeTitleLock.com.
Glenn Beck.
Over the weekend, the Washington Post editorial board continued warning that the stakes in Tuesday's election are much higher than usual, calling it a once-in-a-generation event. Well, I don't think so. I mean, the hyperbole that is being fueled right now, the panic that is just pouring into the engine and igniting over President Trump is it's just off the charts. The left sees tomorrow's election as a lifeline. And so they have gone on and on and on how this is the most important election in the history of elections. And let me say this. It is. But not because of President Trump. Not because of anything other than we are in such a precarious position that we have to decide, are we going to be democratic socialists Or are we going to be a constitutional Republican that's a republic that still believes in capitalism? That really is what it's about. Let's stop making it about personalities. Now, the Post says this election is about something more elemental. What kind of country do we see? What kind of country do we see today? And what kind of country do we see for the future? That makes these midterms unlike anything in recent past. On that, they're correct. But it has nothing to do with hatred and xenophobia, etc., because a lot of that is either spun or an out-and-out lie. What happened in Pittsburgh had nothing to do with President Trump. Nothing to do with President Trump. What's happening on the border really has nothing to do with President Trump. It all has to do with what kind of country we're going to be, a constitutional republic or democratic socialist. The election is important, but every election is important. People have written to me, and I'm going to get into some of the letters. Glenn, when are we going to stand up and fight? You know when? Right now. Right now. You're not going to stand up and fight. You're going to go into the polls. And if every conservative within the sound of my voice, if we all go and vote, we will win. If you don't, the left is motivated. Are you? The Post claims that it is so alarmed that our nation's values are at stake. Our nation's values aren't even understood anymore. What are our nation's values, Washington Post? What are they? Because I think they're life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Among those values, those principles, those things that we used to find self-evident. I'm not sure if we find them self-evident anymore. Why? Because we're talking about, quite honestly, Donald Trump's dumps, dump tweets when he's sitting in the John at 3 o'clock in the morning going, yeah, this is going to drive them crazy. We shouldn't be talking about those. We should be talking about our values and not the twisted values that Barack Obama has been out talking about, because now he is saying that our values are at stake because this president broke families up and put them behind bars. Well, excuse me, President Obama, and excuse me, press. I was there. I saw it. I warned against it. I begged the media to pay attention, and no one would pay attention when this was started under Barack Obama. So now he's trying to say, oh, see, our values have been destroyed by Donald Trump. No, they were destroyed long before Donald Trump. The values crisis. It's much deeper than the values crisis. Saturday, there were two examples of this. On one hand, actor Pete Davidson made fun of Republican U.S. House candidate Dan Crenshaw of Texas. Now, this is during a live sketch from Saturday Night Live. Davidson mocked Crenshaw's eye patch. He lost his right eye. And so he made fun of the lost eye in the eye patch. And I get it. He threw a bone to, out of the six people he made fun of, he said, just to show you that I'm fair, I'll do one on the other side in a race that was guaranteed to go the governor's way. He made fun of a guy with an eye patch because he lost his eye. I know. He lost his eye in the war or something. Yeah, it was a bomb blast during his deployment in Afghanistan. Meanwhile, also on Saturday, 39-year-old Brent Taylor was killed in Afghanistan when a member of an Afghani security force opened fire at a U.S. base in Kabul. Taylor was serving there on his fourth deployment in the National Guard. He was the former mayor of North Ogden in Utah. He leaves behind a wife and seven children. Taylor said his life was oriented towards three loyalties: God, his family, and his country. In his last Facebook post just last week, Taylor wrote, quote, "As the USA gets ready for another election, I hope we all vote. I hope everybody back home exercises their precious right to vote. And that whether Republicans or Democrats, no matter who wins, that we all remember that we have it far better as Americans than anybody else. And we have more as Americans that unite us than divides us. Because united we stand, divided we fall. God bless America," end quote. Now, how can we possibly disagree with that? We're all talking about the things that divide us. And the only things that matter that divide us are our values and our principles. And it's time to look at the big ones, the ones we used to find self-evident. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal and endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable, unchangeable rights. And among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And then the amendments to the Constitution. You have a right to speak out. You have a right to assemble with people that you want to assemble with. You have a right to ask your government tough questions. Because you have freedom of speech, you have a right to ask questions. I'm not sure that America even agrees with this anymore. So much of our life is about choices and perspective. America finishes making its choice tomorrow. We would be well served by a lot less hyperbole. We would be well served by a lot less pointing of the fingers and freaking out over personalities. And a lot more perspective and decency and actual getting up off of the couch and voting.
The best of the Glenn Beck program.
Hello, Mark. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Glenn. Hey, first of all, I want to real thank Sue for leaving a mark on the Hershey stage. And I want to know, was that a 2-pound Hershey bar and did it make it through the weekend?
That was a 5-pound Hershey bar.
Holy mackerel.
Pounds, and it almost made it through the weekend. It was a fight. It was a fight, but it almost made it through the weekend.
Hey, I invited my son when I got the tickets, and he was like, "Really?" I said, "Hey, wait a minute. You're the one who always says you have an open mind." So at dinner that night, when his mom asked him, "Why are you going?" He said, "Well, my dad used my words against me."
That's great.
So, he really enjoyed it. I don't know if you converted him, but he really enjoyed it. But we just had two questions at the end there.
Yeah.
One, you didn't mention where you got the actual number of $142 trillion. We missed who the...
Do you know
really
where that was?
That.
We should have put a footnote on it, but we didn't.
Yeah, I don't have it in front of me, but
we'll look it up for you. We'll look it up for you.
It's in the book. I can tell you that for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, then I haven't read them. I've only gotten through the first chapter, so I got to read through
it. It'll be in the book. All those stats are in the book.
Okay, great. And then the other thing, he was like, okay, you talk about how capitalism got us to where we are, but when it comes to the AI stuff, you're kind of complaining about capitalism. I said, well, but you're talking about a way of life here.
Yeah, no, I'm not complaining about capitalism. Do not fear tech.
No, you weren't. No.
Yeah.
It was about how you're scared of AI and how this is going to, how Silicon Valley wants us to have 100% unemployment.
Right. And I think that's actually a great goal, but we're not preparing for it. We're thinking in two different directions. You know, we're thinking, hey, I'm going to bring the jobs back, while somebody in Silicon Valley, in fact, their whole goal is 100% unemployment. We just have to decide if that's a good thing or not a good thing. Capitalism is, again, the invisible hand of the market, and that invisible hand will give you exactly what you want. So you have to be careful on what you want, what you're asking for. It could, you know, it can smother you or choke you to death, or it could lift people up. It just depends on what the society is. So that's why I was saying that we have to be a better society. We have to be a more informed society. And we have to be a part of all of these decisions that are going on.
Yeah. Well, and at the end there, you did make us both, quote unquote, think.
That's, so. That is, you know, that's great. Did he walk out still hating me as much as he did when he walked in?
No, he did not.
Oh, that's good. That's good.
Wow. I think he saw you, you know, like I said, you know, I've told him, you know, if you listen to Glenn in bits and pieces, you might not get it. You have to listen to him for a few days in a row or so, like I did. I didn't get you. How many years ago you've been on the radio?
Oh, a long time. Yeah, long time.
Yeah, well, after like the first 3 days, I could never turn my radio off again.
Thank you very much. I'm on the road a lot,
so I get to hear you a lot. So
thank you.
I appreciate it.
You bet, Mark. Thank you. You know, we used to say, give us 30 days because people, it's a cycle this with this show. If you're a new listener, give us 30 days because everybody hates me at the beginning. And then after 30 days, you know, you... Well, it's a white hot hate. And then it's about 20 days. It's a white hot hate. And then 30 days, you just kind of go numb inside and you just have no desire to turn this channel anymore.
It's our big plan.
It's our big plan. Mm-hmm. So give us 30 days and you'll go dead inside. We say welcome to Mr. Pat Gray from the Pat Gray Radio Roundup that you can hear prior to this program on the Blaze Radio Network.
How many days do we need to go numb on your program, Pat? Do you have any idea?
700.
700. Okay.
7 days.
That's not bad.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. You ready for the election tomorrow?
Oh man, am I?
Yeah. It's gonna be.
I'm ready for the ads to stop. I'm ready for the madness to be over.
Do you
I'm
the
really...
text messages to stop.
Or you, yeah. I have. Oh. You know the one thing about being disconnected from television. I don't see the ads anymore. I don't watch network television. I don't watch cable news. I get everything online. So I'm disconnected from all of that crap. And I am so thrilled.
That's because you don't watch sports. The rest of us are too, except for sports.
Yeah.
And so it comes up. Beto is everywhere. I mean, everywhere. Every break on Spotify. It's Beto O'Rourke. I mean,
pay the extra $5 a month or whatever it is for the premium subscription.
To, that's what I said to my wife. I'm not paying extra for this. Please, I don't want to see Beto anymore. I don't want to hear him.
If you're not man enough to pull an extra $5 out of your wife's purse,
do it. It's so it's frustrating. But
so is there a chance that these poll numbers are true? Now there's the latest poll, and it's Stu is our poll expert, so it's kind of a dicey pollster. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, there's a Democratic poll that has come out, and when you know it's branded that way, typically they're good results because they don't release them if they're
good
not
results
bad.
For Democrats. Yeah.
For Democrats, right? Yeah. So that they have the latest poll that came out there was a Democratic poll that has Beto and Cruz tied at 49.
No,
I don't believe
not.
That.
I don't believe that for a second.
However, a nonpartisan poll came out a few days earlier that had Beto down 3, 50-47.
I don't believe that either. I don't believe it.
I don't tend to either, but there's been, and then the previous poll before that, which is Quinnipiac, a very, very well-known, respected pollster, also had it 51-46.
Yeah, 5.
So a 5-point lead. I would say.
I think it's going to be over 10.
I think it's
going
to, I do too.
I think
10 or more.
It's going to be over 10. I'd be shocked if it, you know, but they have poured so much money into
Texas. Well, now
he's
up to $70 million, and I think he's spending it all.
I mean, it is crazy here in Texas what people like George Soros. Oh, you mean the dirty Jew? No. No. What I mean is George Soros.
But people every like time George you say George Soros, you mean.
You know what's amazing? You know what's amazing? I actually heard out in the same sentence. You know, people on the right, they only hate George Soros because he's Jewish, and he is nothing like the Koch brothers. Wait, hold it. Yeah, you're right. He does a lot more than the Koch brothers, but we can't say we don't like George Soros' spending of money because we disagree with his policies, but the left can come out and make
demonize the Koch brothers every day. Harry Reid got up on the floor of the Senate and did just that.
And again, like we've talked about this with the caravan, they're saying, well, you're anti-Semite because you're just assuming George Soros is.
We never have.
So ridiculous. But we have evidence, and we've talked about it, that he was supporting the first caravan.
Yes.
Also, George Soros, on record, in his own writing, in 2016, said he was planning to spend $500 million to help refugees and migrants, particularly migrants.
So you just have his words.
I mean, again, like that doesn't mean that some of the $500 million specifically went to this caravan, but he wrote an op-ed saying he was going to spend half a billion dollars to support migrants.
Yeah.
Well, it's not incredibly crazy to assume that the biggest migrant issue in America might just be supported by George Soros.
Then we have the project.
Wait. I cannot let that pass without pointing out the anti-Semitism that is coming from Stu. I apologize.
Is he even a practicing Jew? I don't
know.
No,
he's an atheist. He's an atheist.
So I don't know what.
Oh my gosh, now you're going to dogpile on this helpless old man?
He's spending $500 million on the exact issue we're talking about.
Show me the proof.
He wrote an op-ed about it.
Show me more proof.
Do you guys see the Project Veritas thing on Beto, on the Beto campaign?
Yeah, I saw it a little bit, yeah.
It was pretty compelling, I thought. You know, a lot of his stuff, and I think we've talked about this in the past, we're not gigantic fans. Some of the things he's done have been really good. And then
sometimes he gets into creative editing, and he also, I mean, it's just...
But this looked pretty legit. Yeah. I mean, you've got campaign field managers who are talking about the fact that they have donated money to this caravan.
Okay, now the argument is, on the other side, that this is, again, creative editing. But I will tell you this. There is no way to creative edit something where they are saying, yeah, he is only saying these things because... he's trying to get the conservatives. So he's only doing these things and keeping quiet on this because of XYZ. Mm-hmm. Unless the sentence before is, what you're saying and accusing us of is completely dishonest. It would be like us coming out and saying... the phrase.
And that's just not the case. Not what's happening
here. It's not the case.
Yeah. And yet they wrote this article in Mediaite talking about how Cruz is bringing this up, that they might be funding in part the caravan. And the spin on this story is O'Rourke has not publicly commented on Cruz's accusation, which he made without evidence. Well, no, he didn't. He's got the Project Veritas video as evidence. It's just...
And they're not...
Nobody's paying any attention to it.
Yeah, I mean, their defense largely is not even to deny that they did this. Their defense is to say, well, we gave some money to charity.
Yeah.
But of course, you can't just take campaign dollars.
You cannot. It has to be above board.
There's a lot of process. Again, I don't necessarily agree with these campaign finance laws, but they do exist.
You have them again on tape saying that they're doing it. Multiple people... in different situations, saying that they're doing it, then saying, we talked to the lead campaign manager. They were fine with it. We just don't want the wrong people to find out.
And
how can you creatively edit that with several people to make that not what they mean?
She also said she's got the texts to prove it, that she notified him and that it was okay. So it seems like you have them dead to rights if they're telling the truth. On a fun note, you guys probably, being out as you were this weekend, probably didn't see the Queen movie.
Was it good?
Really good.
So
really good.
I have heard that the reviews, or some reviews, are coming back and saying this is horrible. And everyone I know who have seen it. Yeah, everyone I know who's seen it said this is fantastic.
Jackie and I loved it. I loved it.
He's the guy who plays him. He was in...
unbelievable.
He was in... what's that TV show? It's so good. Mr. Robot. That's the kid from Mr. Robot.
Oh, that's right. That's who that is.
Yeah, that's the kid from Mr. Robot.
They give him prosthetic teeth, and it makes him look just like Freddie
Mercury.
I hear
he sounds and looks just like him.
He does sound like him because a lot of it is Freddie.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they had to amalgamate the voice. Nobody could approximate Freddie Mercury's voice.
No.
The only problem I had was with, there were some timeline issues where, how when time passes, they'll put up on the screen 1980.
Yeah.
Well, in 1980, they have Brian May writing We Will Rock You, which happened in 1977. And so, I don't know why they did that. Yeah. I think they said they did it for time. And then the other thing, which is kind of big because it's, the crescendo. He didn't know he had AIDS yet in 1985. And that's when the big
Spoiler alert, he had AIDS?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Please.
How's he doing? Is he recovering? I mean, how's the treatment?
He doesn't feel very good.
Oh, no.
Okay.
He died.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Oh, thank you for breaking it softly like
yeah,
that.
You're welcome.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's a real spoiler alert. I mean, we make fun of Glenn, but I mean, he gave away the whole story.
He gave the whole story away.
Sorry
my
about
gosh.
That.
They do
my
those,
gosh.
They make those weird choices, though.
Yeah, they
to,
do.
To try to add. It's like when you're watching a true story, you just want it to be the true story. Even
yes.
if it sucks
yeah,
a couple percent of the drama
right.
out,
yeah,
just tell
please.
It the way it happened.
So, Pat, did they cover his, I mean, did they cover his death?
No.
They didn't?
No.
Was his girlfriend with him at the end?
Yes. She was with him his whole life.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Good.
Yeah.
Wow. Look at that. He's not spoiling anything.
Go,
that is
go.
Really good.
I guess
you're
I shouldn't,
in,
shouldn't have said that.
You're in for a big surprise.
You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck Program.
Like listening to this podcast? If you're not a subscriber, become one now on iTunes. And while you're there, do us a favor and rate the show.
The Glenn Beck Program. Election by numbers.
7 in 10 voters say their vote is meant to send a message to Donald Trump.
Why are people so obsessed with this guy?
I don't know, man.
I get that he's president of the United States, but this is America. We're not supposed to be obsessed with the president 24 hours a day. That's
well, you know, they're
the
obsessed with the reason why the left is so obsessed with him is because he is destroying the fear that the left has spent decades trying to perfect. They want you to be afraid of them, afraid of saying the wrong things, afraid of having a different opinion. And he doesn't care. And it's that's what's driving them nuts. He doesn't care, and they can't destroy him. And on the outside, it looks like he's the easiest guy to destroy. But here they have all this fear, and it's worked for so long. If he teaches people not to care, they're in real trouble.
The obsession part of this, I think, is odd, just that it overwhelms other individuals, right? Like, you know, if you really dislike Donald Trump, but you're in Arizona, and you're, let's say, in the middle, you can't possibly think that Sinema is a good candidate to run to be your senator. She is a freaking code pink level activist. She's a person who said that Arizona is the meth lab of democracy. She's a person who's called people in Arizona dumb over and over and over again.
But wait, isn't that the same thing that people like me were saying to evangelicals? How can you possibly vote for this person when he said he's never asked for forgiveness? All of those things.
Right.
This is the point that was accepted by the right. This is just now being accepted by the left, but they are on policy. This was about him personally. And so people were like, I'm not electing a priest. I'm electing a president. That they didn't disagree with him on policy. What they disagreed with him on, what you disagree with them on in Arizona is policy. Democrats should wake up and go, okay, I'm blind from my hatred of Donald Trump. And I think that the evangelicals sold their soul to the devil. Well, they didn't disagree on policy. You hopefully disagree on massive policy and don't even really like her. You're just voting to right. stop him.
And that's my point. I mean, this is not people are going to try to make this into a Donald Trump election. And it does seem like, I mean, you just said 70% of people are saying that that's a big factor in their vote. But it's, you know, if you look at the individual race, there's two people in front of you. Who do you think is going to be the better representative of your state? I can't imagine Arizona actually believes Sinema is going to be better than McSally in that state, but it may happen. It's a very, very close
race. Can you imagine, Stu, how big the wave would have been in 2010 had the media had this kind of support for the Tea Party?
Oh, my gosh.
I mean,
imagine,
think of this.
Puff pieces like Beto is getting for
oh my gosh.
Tea Party candidates.
Last night, ABC running a puff piece on Planned Parenthood. I mean, it's crazy what's going on and their puff pieces. Imagine if the Tea Party would have had this kind of positive coverage. Mm. And what they didn't, and look at the giant wave. Now they do. And look at the not giant wave. This is close.
It is very close. And this is The reason why you see all these pollsters are saying they think the Republicans are going to hold the Senate. Most of them think it's 80-85% chance they will hold the Senate. Really, only a quote-unquote blue wave type of election actually gets the Democrats to control. And the reason is there's massive structural advantages for Republicans in the Senate election. If without anyone being elected here, these are absolute locks. 42 Republicans, 23 Democrats. So we go into this election with Republicans having a 19-seat advantage in the Senate. It's just a matter of fleshing out the rest. Problem is, a lot of these races are going to go to the Democrats that are undecided. So if you go at just things that look like pretty sure things, likely, you know, safe seats and likely seats, you get to about 46 Republicans and about 41 Democrats. So they're going to, you know, it's states like, you know, New York are going to go, and Utah is going to go to Republicans. Mm-hmm. And we're assuming all of these things. So it's 46-41, and then you get to the closer races. In the middle there, you have a couple that look like they're leaning towards Democrats, a couple like they're leaning towards Republicans, and then a bunch in the middle. So to get to 50, however, for Democrats, they not only have to win all of their safe races and all their likely wins, they have to win their leaner races as well. That gets them to 43. So they would have to win 7 of the 9 toss-up races. Now, one of them is listed, you know, the New York Times lists Menendez as a toss-up race. I don't believe that. That is a Democrat race. You know, I think it's a leaner. It's not impossible the Republican could win there, but how many times do we have to be fooled by freaking races in New Jersey as Republicans? It looks like Menendez is probably going to pull that off. There's some polling that shows it close. The other one in there in that group is Cruz. Now, Cruz has had some polling that has showed him recently up only by 3 or 4 points. But he is still the favorite in this race in Texas over Beto, despite the $9 trillion that Democrats are spending on it. So if the Democrats can't get the Cruz seat, they would have to sweep all of the other toss-up races. All of them. And that's not likely. I mean, you really look at some of these races. Some of them are, I think, Republican favorites. You know, races, I think McCaskill's in serious trouble in Missouri. I think there's a good poll in Florida, although, you know, most of the polling has showed the Democrats slightly ahead. Scott actually was ahead in one poll in Florida today. The Indiana race is a complete toss-up. Nevada is a toss-up. Tennessee is probably leaning towards Republicans. If they can just win Cruz and Tennessee, they're going to hold the Senate. That's likely how this goes. And they could, after that, everything's gravy, right? You're going into, they could easily win 5, 6 of these toss-up races. And in that case, they're going to have a nice, hefty advantage to get things passed. Of course, doesn't mean that much unless you also hold the House. It's going to be hard to get things through.
So the House has passed so many things that the Senate has just not acted on.
Mm-hmm.
If the House is lost to the Democrats, we need to be on the phone with the Senate on Wednesday saying, pass those bills. Pass the bills that we've been waiting and passed by the House. Because you're not going to get any legislation through with the Democrats in control of the House.
Yeah.
And God forbid the Democrats in control of Congress, in control of the Senate as well. I just don't think that's going to happen.
Oh, that stuff should be in session on Christmas morning.
Yeah.
And they should be still voting on stuff Christmas morning. They shouldn't take one day off until that new Congress arrives.
That's absolutely true. And I will tell you this. They are so desperate. The press is so desperate for this to be true and a blue wave. Just know this, no matter what happens, I mean, unless no Republicans show up, this is not a blue wave. And no matter what happens, unless, again, the Republicans lose everything they're expected to win, this is nothing like what it usually is. I'm not even talking about 2010, that wave with the Tea Party. I'm talking about what it usually is. When a president who is very active, usually they lose the House and maybe the House and the Senate when you get to midterms, because Americans just like to have the balance of power and the checks and balances. If this is close, that says a ton not about Donald Trump, but about how ineffective and how out of touch with the American people, their own voters, how out of touch the Democrats really are. But all of this is just gobbledygook. If you're not out voting tomorrow, you have to go out and vote. I don't care what side of the aisle you're on. You have to go out and vote.
I care. You shouldn't go out and vote if you're voting for Democrats.
I say that because that's the American thing. We have to support everybody. But I also will say the Democrats are going out and they're busing every old person in a coma. It is our responsibility. Look for those people in your office that vote like you do, think like you do, but are like, I don't know if I... Get them in the car with you tomorrow to vote. Call Grandma. Is she going there? You know what, Grandma? Let me pick you up and take you. Make sure everybody on your contact list that can vote is voting. And if you have a single doubt, tomorrow might be a good day to have a sick day and play taxi or Uber for everybody you know.
Election by numbers on the Glenn Beck program.
All right, let me tell you about our sponsor this half hour, then we'll come back with more of our election coverage. And don't forget that tomorrow we have election coverage on the Blaze TV starting at 6 p.m. I have not heard, Marissa, do you have a list of all the people that are going to be on with us tomorrow? Still working on it. We have a huge list of people that are not just with the Blaze, all across the conservative spectrum, from wild, almost anarchist capitalists to I think we have one Democrat on, but he's Democrat in name only. And we're going to be covering the people who think like you and the people that you know and trust on tomorrow, and it's going to be a lot of fun. That's midterm coverage, begins at 6 p.m. tomorrow, only on the Blaze TV. I am the designated driver. Read into that what you will.
This is the best of the Glenn Beck program, and we really want to thank you for listening.
So we talk about comedy a lot here on the program because comedy is really, really important. Laughter is important. We have to be able to make fun of each other and fun of ourselves. And honestly, if you can't make fun of yourself, you should not be making fun of other people. It is a great coping mechanism and one of the things we need. And it's quite honestly why people like Jim Gaffigan are doing so well right now, because he's not using comedy as a weapon. He is allowing it to be a release. All too often, it is now turned into a weapon, and all too often, it is aimed at conservatives. Saturday Night Live is a great case in point. Last Saturday, but really it's the last decade or so, the problem with SNL's so-called comedy is that it's not funny. It's always not been funny. They've never known how to end comedy bits. That is traditional. And only once in a while, some seasons, have they been funny. But that was before the invention of what I like to call clapter. It's not laughter. It's, oh my gosh, that is a great point that makes me feel like I'm so very smart. Many left-leaning people talk about SNL skits and they don't laugh. It's not enjoyable in that way. It's clapter. I'm superior. Oh yes, that's what everybody thinks. Well, this weekend offered the perfect example with Pete Davidson's clunky segment during Weekend Update. He gave impressions of some of the candidates. And you know, look, if you can make fun of yourself, you can make fun of others, but is there a line? I say as long as everybody is in on the joke, you can make jokes. But the left would tell you never, ever about somebody who has any kind of condition or handicap or difference. How dare you make fun of that? Well, Texas congressional candidate Dan Crenshaw, who is a Navy SEAL, did 5 tours of duty. He wears an eye patch now because he lost his right eye when he was hit by an IED blast in 2012. He was medically retired. He has two bronze stars, the Purple Heart, and the Navy Commendation Medal with Valor. So after they make fun of him for wearing an eye patch, no class, let me play for you how Mr. Crenshaw showed all class in his response.
I want us to get away from this culture where we demand apologies every time someone misspeaks. I think that would be very healthy for our nation to go in that direction. You know, we don't need to be outwardly outraged. I don't need to demand apologies from them. They can do whatever they want. You know, it's they're feeling the heat from around the country right now, and that's fine. But I would like him and Saturday Night Live to recognize something, which is that veterans across the country probably don't feel as though their wounds they received in battle should be the subject of a bad punchline for a bad joke. And here's the real atrocity of all this. It wasn't even funny.
No, but it did get clapped. Mr. Crenshaw joins us now. Hello, Dan. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me, Glenn.
First of all, thank you for your service and your sacrifice. But let me talk a little bit about, were you watching Saturday Night Live when it happened?
Well, I don't make a habit of watching Saturday Night Live, so I did not see it, but I did get a lot of texts about it in the morning.
Right. So every single one of my Navy SEAL friends wrote to me and said, you have to take this on. And I went and I watched it. And it just wasn't funny to make fun of somebody who lost. And to take it so flippantly, say, I don't know, he lost his eye in a war or whatever. I just don't think it's funny to do that. On either side. However, what I was really impressed with is the way you responded. How come you responded this way when you had every reason to have righteous indignation and use this for your political gain?
Well, you know, I simply responded the way I actually felt, which was, you know, a little exasperated by the whole thing, a little annoyed because I have been watching these shows like Saturday Night Live and a lot of the late shows really deteriorate into simply political platforms as opposed to good comedy. Mm-hmm. And so when you mentioned your SEAL friends, you know, SEALs have pretty thick skin, right? And we like to make fun of each other. And but there's always been sort of a lot. And this is the conversation I always have with my friends. I'm like, hey, you know what? It's fair game, but it has to actually be funny, and it has to actually be original and witty. And and this just went far beyond that. I mean, the first part of what he said was just kind of strange. Frankly, it didn't make sense. But it was the last part where, you know, lost it in war or whatever. Listen, I don't have to be offended by that. I don't have to be outraged by that. That doesn't mean what he said isn't offensive, right? Because it's not just me I have to think about. I do have to think about all the veterans who are disfigured from war and now feel like they're fair game for just, you know, roaring laughter from the crowd. I thought that was a little strange. And I think a lot of us veterans are just looking at that and thinking, well, why is that funny? You know, we truly just don't see the joke. You know, just be funny. Be funny. Do your job and be funny. Like, you know, put some work into it. It's supposed to be an art, you know. But they're not, and that's the real tragedy here.
I will tell you that I have a lot of veteran friends who, to make others feel comfortable, make fun of their lost limb or whatever, and they go out of their way, and it's usually very funny when they're making fun of it. And so it's not a lack of a sense of humor on it. It's just an appropriate sense of humor on it. And you know, for instance, we always say in our family, we wreck each other hard, and it's a sign of love in our family. But we don't wreck people that we don't know. It's not like you're coming into our house and we just start wrecking you. You have to be kind of part of the family and be loved if we're going to wreck you in that sort of a way, because we know you'd wreck us just as hard for whatever it is we've got going on in our life.
Well, I think there's a basic social etiquette that kind of keeps our country together. And, you know, we're seeing that fraying quite a bit, that social fabric. And, and basic manners and basic etiquette. And this is just an example of that.
Can I play devil's advocate on that? What would you say to the people at CNN or SNL that might respond and say, "Oh, really? It's etiquette. Well, what about Donald Trump?"
That was actually where I was going with this point. That is the counter argument constantly, and I'm seeing it all over Twitter. I'm seeing that coming from the left. They say, "Oh, well, Trump." And my response to that is, what on earth does Trump have to do with a conversation between Saturday Night Live and myself?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, it's wholly inappropriate. Two things can be true at once here. All right. Some things the president said might have been inappropriate. Also, this is inappropriate. Two things can be true at once. It's okay to say that. You don't have to do whataboutism on this. And they're making themselves look bad by trying to claim that somehow this is the president's fault. I mean, what else can we blame the president for? I mean, it really does become a very ridiculous conversation at some point.
So you have been a crazy candidate. You, from a field of 9 candidates, you won by 155 votes. Then in the runoff, you won with 70% of the votes. You're running for Ted Poe's seat in Congress. He's retiring. You've kind of come out of nowhere here, and you're not getting any of the Beto coverage. What is the message that is connecting with people?
Well, that's a good question. Yeah, we've been running almost a year now, and you know, we barely made it into the runoff. Texas primaries are very early, and we just came out with just 155 point vote margin. I think what people like is the fact that I talk to them like they're people. All right. You know, politicians get a little bit too wrapped around political talking points, and we forget to explain why we believe what we believe. You know, we forget to explain a few layers deep, maybe because we think we'll get misquoted, or maybe because we think voters can't take it. Well, they can, and they do want to hear it. They do want to hear a little bit more deeper reasoning on why we believe entitlement reform is important, or how we're going to fix the flooding issues in Houston, or how we're going to keep our nation safe. They appreciate an ability to articulate conservative values in a way that is persuasive and convincing and will grow our base, as opposed to just talking to ourselves constantly. So I think they like that. And the other thing I really like to do is go from
Either play video games or not answer your phone. I'm not sure what that is. But That's okay. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, I like to do retail politics. I like to just go find people where their lives are happening, whether they're having a beer or having dinner, and we just go talk to folks. And in the end, politics is not all that complicated. In the end, you just have to connect with people and know inside yourself why you're running, and be able to express that to voters.
So why is it? Why are you running, Dan? What is it, the thing that drives you? What's the thing that keeps you up at night and says you have to go to Washington to this cesspool? Because why?
Right. Well, so I'll give you two kind of forms of answers to that. You know, from a policy perspective, for the Houston area, it's flooding infrastructure. It's border security. It's economic freedom. It's entitlement reform. It's getting control of our debt. Okay. On a more deeper, maybe philosophical reason, I have the sense, and I think it's backed up by reality, that the Republican Party is losing the next generation. And I don't feel like we're articulating the why about what we believe very well. I don't think that we're articulating how important foundational principles are. I don't think that we're articulating that our approach to government, this idea of limited government and local control and responsible and sustainable spending, a sustainable mm-hmm. Role of federal government. Mm-hmm. You know, those are the ways that we should be explaining, like, this is the principles behind why this policy makes sense. Don't start with the policy, start with those principles. It helps people understand where we're coming from. It helps the left understand that we're not, in fact, evil. We do have hearts, all right? But what we actually believe in is a sustainable way to govern, and we believe in putting the maximum amount of control at the local level. That's what it means to be a Republican. And we frame all that within a system of virtue. You know, and I'll steal Dennis Prager's line on this, and what a conservative stand for. Just look at a coin, e pluribus unum. We don't believe in dividing people up in tribes. liberty, we always ask the question, is this giving us more liberty or less liberty? And then we frame that with an in God we trust, because we know we can't have perfect liberty without a moral foundation. That moral foundation is found in God.
Dan, I really like you. I really like you. I'm expecting that you are going to win. May I make a recommendation to you? People go to Washington all the time and they lose their soul. And I can tell just talking to you that you have a pretty firm grip on that. May I make a recommendation that you make a declaration to yourself that maybe only you and your wife see, and you really think it through before you're sworn in, you check it from time to time, because people go to Washington and they start making compromises and excuses. And what you just said about our principles and our values and our founding foundation, everything that we're built on, the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights, we have a lot of people in Washington that don't actually defend those things now, and I don't know if they actually even believe them anymore. Please write down what you really believe and check it from some time, and write on there too. Don't make excuses for yourself, Dan. So you're scolding your future self in case you start to go awry.
I like that approach, Glenn, and I respect you a great deal. I think I'll follow your advice on that.
Thank you, Dan. I really appreciate it. I wish you all the luck tomorrow. And thanks for being cool about Saturday Night Live. We don't need more victims.
No, we don't. That's exactly right. I've never seen myself as a victim. I appreciate you having me on.
Thank you, man. I appreciate it. I've never met a SEAL that does see themselves as a victim.
That's great.
Yeah,
that's,
I
love that approach.
All right, he's Texas' 2nd Congressional District, and he is trying to take over for Ted Poe. The vote is tomorrow.
The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.